will begin. So tonight is we're continuing with our classes on Genjo Koan. And this is a text by Dogen Zenji, Zen master from the 1200s in Japan. And it is the passage we will be studying tonight is on page 50 of the chant book. I will be sharing my screen and doing a handout in the Zendo of the passage, but if you want to have the whole text in front of you to, you know, if you think about other passages or what came before or after this passage, then you have that to compare. And then I think maybe the host who posted the link to the recitation could post that again so that people online, you can have a link. But I will also be posting a link to tonight's passage in particular. So very briefly, yeah, there may be some folks here that are brand new to Genjo Koan, but I will skip the preamble tonight. And I will, just for the host, I will want to do small groups again at some point. So just make sure that there, three is ideal. Make sure there's no groups of two, four if necessary, because it doesn't necessarily all break out evenly. And that will just be about 10 minutes. So tonight's passage is on page 50, and it is firewood. This is the translation by Shohaku Okamura that we recite. Firewood becomes ash. Ash cannot become firewood again. However, we should not view ash as after and firewood as before. We should know that firewood dwells in the Dharma position of firewood and has its own before and after. Although before and after exist, past and future are cut off. Ash stays in the position of ash with its own before and after. As firewood never becomes firewood again after it has burned to ash, there is no return to living after a person dies. However, in Buddhadharma, it is an unchanged tradition not to say that life becomes death. Therefore, we call it no arising. It is the established way of Buddha's turning the Dharma wheel not to say that death becomes life. Therefore, we call it no perishing. Life is a position in time. Death is also a position in time. This is like winter and spring. We don't think that winter becomes spring, and we don't say that spring becomes summer. So, I will hand those out, and I will share my little document that I made today. And I will also, as I've done before, I will paste a link in the chat to a PDF of this document, if that is easier for you to pull up. So that is the PDF to the document, but I will also share my screen, at least temporarily. Make people big again, so I can see at least a few Zoom people. Okay. So this was kind of a long passage tonight. So what I did, as I've done before, there's have the Japanese on the top row, and as some people have asked, there are some some of those characters are kanji, which are, they're symbols for whole words. And there's no key as to how they're actually pronounced, which makes, you know, learning to read Japanese tricky. Some of the symbols are syllabary, are hiragana, which are, that's Japanese written out phonetically. And so sometimes, in, you know, that you'll see in Japanese writing, you know, some of its characters, some of it's written out phonetically. Sometimes the phonetic stuff has to do with verb endings or like kind of prepositions, those kinds of things. And some of them, sometimes just a word is spelled that way instead of using the kanji. And I'm not sure exactly when that is or why Dogen decides sometimes to use one or the other. And then the second line is the, you know, the phonetics, you know, sounding out of the Japanese. The third is like a, you know, word by word translation. It's not trying to make a sentence, right? It's just, okay, this character means this, this word means this. And then this time on the fourth line, I offered a translation based on kind of a, it's obviously borrows very strongly from Shohaku Okamura's translation, but in some cases I made this translation even simpler because, you know, a translator, if they're going to be turning this stuff into English, does some interpretation, fills it in order to make it less awkward or obscure sounding, they fill in the sentence. But I find that seems to involve some interpretation that I would kind of rather not, wasn't there. I don't want this interpreted for me. I want to see what Dogen wrote. And obviously, because I don't speak Japanese and I'm not familiar with all these characters, there's a limit to, you know, how close we can really come to this. But so just to kind of briefly go through this again. So we say, so there's takigi wa. Takigi is firewood. And then the wa means that's the subject. Hai is ash. To makes that the object. And naru is become. So when firewood becomes ash, or firewood become ash. And then sara ni, again, kaerite, change or return. Takagi, firewood, to narubeki, can become, and ni arazu, is not. So that negates, so it can't become. So when, you know, once firewood has become ash, firewood cannot become firewood again. It cannot return to being firewood. Okay, pretty straightforward. However, ash as the subject meaning after, and firewood as before, perceive or view, kenshu, perceive and grasp, subekarazu, you should not. So you should not perceive ash as after and firewood as before. So this is a pointing to, because a lot of times, you know, Genjo Koan and Zen is dealing with this, the whole idea of emptiness of self. So what he's pointing out here is that, I mean, obviously to a certain extent, right, there's firewood, fire happens, then there's ash, the firewood's before, the ash is after. But that's not really what I'm aiming at here. Because when we're thinking about firewood and ash, it's no big deal for us. It's only when we're thinking about ourselves that it becomes confusing to us. So if we're just thinking about, you know, firewood and ash, we don't look at that piece of firewood and think, you know, there's some essence in this firewood. And now that essence has become ash. Like there's something something the same that has undergone that change and has endured that change, that remains somehow unchanged and might be sad that it's not firewood anymore or something like that. We don't generally have a problem with that because we don't tend to project on firewood and ash the way that we project on ourselves and on beings, living beings. So we're saying, you know, you don't think of that ash as after and firewood before as a state that is experienced by some being or force that persists through that change. So then we go on to Shirupeshi. We should understand that Takagi wa, firewood, Takagi no, firewoods, and then ho, the U, just by the way, H-O-U, that just means it's a long O. It could be an O with a line over it instead, but sometimes it's just written with a U. So ho e, dharma position, ni in, ju is reside or live, ju jite means, you know, makes it into a verb. So we should think, though, we should know that firewood lives in firewood's dharma position. So what is the dharma position? And I don't know that I can just, you know, explain a dharma position, but I'll do my best to give you a sense of what is meant. And it's really the reality of existence this moment right here. So each of us is just living in our dharma position. We are part of this universe. We're right here, we're right now, we're like we're inseparable from the universe. If you just took a snapshot of the universe right now, like, we have our place in it, and the universe would not be the same without our presence right here, right now. So there's a sense that everything has its dharma, has its true place at any given moment, any given time. So in this sense, firewood lives in firewood's dharma position. You know, there's firewood, great. And at this moment, if we have some firewood in front of us, there's firewood. And then the next part of that sentence is saki adi nochi adi. Before is or exists, and after is or exists. So this is where that, you know, in Japanese, and I'm sure in Chinese as well, you know, the exact relationship between these words is not necessarily clear. And I'm concluding that when I look at all the different translations and I come up with what all these different translators have come up with. And so Shohaku Okamura says, firewood has the dharma position of firewood has its own before and after. So as if this before and after kind of belongs to the firewood, or to the firewood's dharma position. I kind of wanted to strip away some of that interpretation and just saying, you know, so here's this piece of firewood. There's the reality of it this moment, right here, right now. And it does have a past and it does have a future. Like, there's a string of causes and conditions that led to it being here. There was a tree, there was somebody who cut it down. All right, so it does have a past, and there's a potentiality here. It does have a future, but neither of those really exist. The past and future are abstractions. You know, what exists right now is the results of those causes and conditions and the potentiality of the future. But past, and that's why past and the next part, although before and after exist. So it's interesting in the next sentence, Dogen uses a different term for, it looks like before and after. Zen go is like a conjunction, and Zen is before and go is after. So Zen go, like before and after. So I could, you know, we have to write before hyphen after, before and after. So before and after, although they exist, before and after are cut off. So before and after, and then Sidon is, Sai is limit or time or side, and Don is cut, decide or sever. So it was suggested that, you know, before and after are cut off. So to me, that speaks to that sense that, you know, at any given moment, there is a sense in which we have a past and a future. And yet at this very moment, this moment exists independently of that past and future, if you will. That past and future are abstractions. So there, in a sense, there's just this moment. So, moving on, and if anybody does have, like, I don't know, if you have a question, feel free to raise your hand, jump in. I can't see everybody on the Zoom screen, so try to use that raise your hand button, and then I'll, you know, it'll, down under reactions, you can raise your hand, and then you'll pop up to the top of my screen. Yeah, Erica.
I had a quick question. So if Zen means before, why is it Zen Buddhism?
Is a different character.
Oh.
So okay. There's oh. like,
okay.
That's one of the extra confusing things, because like, there's tons of different characters that are pronounced Zen. So if you're just, you know, speaking Japanese, perhaps you're not even necessarily going to, you know, you have to clarify which character you're actually referring to. So, mm-hmm. So ha, I guess it'd be homonyms. I think you can tell, often tell what character it might be from what it's next to, from the context. Mm-hmm. So chances are Zen, as in Zen Buddhism, meaning meditation, is probably never put together with go, you know, Zen go. Good question though. All right. So moving on. Haiwa, haino. So ash, and then ashes, dharma position, in is. So ash is also in its dharma position, right? We have firewood lives in its dharma position. Ash is in its dharma position. And let's see, and it also has its before and after. And then Kano Takagi Hai to Nari Nuru Nochi. That firewood ash, it's a firewood when it has completely become ash, after it has become completely become ash. Sara ni takagi to narazaru ga gotaku. Again, firewood cannot become firewood again. So like firewood cannot become firewood again after it has become ash, comma. So hito no shinuru nochi, like this, a person who completely dies, after a person dies, sara ni shoto narazu. Again, life doesn't become. So a person cannot become alive again after they have died. So one of the things I like about looking at the kanji is, in a way, Dogen seems simpler, that you see these repeated patterns, these repeated sentences, which are just, basically, he's just changed the characters and he's just going methodically through. And in English, you know, the nature of English, we have to tie it together with all kinds of different words, and it sounds kind of strangely repetitive. But in this case, I really like how it's just like firewood cannot become firewood again after it has become ash, a person. So, you know, the firewood has completely become ash, a person has completely died, and they cannot become alive again. So like Shohaku Okamura says, I think he says, there is no, excuse me, no return to living after a person dies. But I kind of like, I like my translation, if you will, because, you know, when I hear there is no return to living after a person dies, I kind of start to think about, you know, after they're gone, and then maybe their, you know, body feeds some life, and, you know, there's kind of return to living, or, you know, maybe after some time they're reborn or something. But when I think about, okay, firewood's become ash, it's not going back to that piece of firewood. And he's a person, and they've died. They're not going back to being that person. It's just like, it's kind of obvious and concrete. Even if some other weird, wacky thing happens, we're not going back. We're not going back to that. So, in this passage, you know, is about life and death, although I should note that in Zen, we're not just necessarily talking about, you know, life and then physical death of the body and then what happens. We are, but then there's also just the arising and passing of things each moment. So the great matter of birth and death is not just a matter of our life and our death. That's a great matter as well. But the arising and passing, the things that are born and pass away each moment, each day, each year of our lives. So what is Dogen saying about our life and death? So on the one hand, he says clearly, a person cannot become alive again after they have died. And there's nothing in here about heaven or an afterlife. So this may seem a little bit like a teaching about nihilism. You know, your body ceases to function, that's it. But then there's this second part of the teaching. And this is very, so he continues with, however, so there is no return to living after a person dies. However, so this is a very fascinating part of the teaching, which we're going to hopefully in small groups chat about. I hesitate to say hope or solace or something, but you know, what is Buddhism? What is Zen? What is Dogen offering us here? Essentially, this teaching, if we fully awaken to what it means, can give us a sense of peace and ease about death in the literal sense, as well as in the moment by moment sense, that is very powerful. Even though we're not saying there's a return to living after a person dies, or an afterlife, or whatever. So the big question for tonight is, you know, what is being pointed at here? What is being offered? So go into it briefly, and then I'll turn you loose to discuss it. So shike aru o, however, so sho is the symbol for life also the symbol for birth or arising? So the kanji for the word meaning those things. And it repeats, it appears many times in this passage, as you'll see. So life as the subject, no, and she is death. Ni becomes the object, and Naruto become, so iwazaru wa, we say not, we don't say. So the Buddha Dharma, bupo no, saramareru, determined, decided, established, narai, teaching, custom, nari is. So to kind of flip it so that in English it makes sense, the Buddha Dharma, the established teaching of the Buddha Dharma is that life does not become death. So that's interesting. So we were just talking about, you know, the piece of firewood does not, like, or it does become ash in a sense, but that's not like there's firewood, then there's ash. They're both completely what they are. At any given moment, there's firewood or there's ash. They're connected by causality, but there's not a, there's nothing, there's no essence of firewood which is lost in that transition. So we're saying life does not become and therefore, so the next sentence is kono yue ni fusho to yu. So therefore, we say not life or fusho. So fu is a negation. It's no or non or not. And then sho, again, is that life, birth, or arising. So therefore, we say, and no birth or no death. So no birth is one way this is translated. Shohaku Okamura calls it no arising. I said not life. And that's not saying that there isn't any life, but it's saying that life as we conceive of it doesn't exist that way. That makes sense. Especially if we think of an individual and we think of their life as something that is going to suffer death. It's saying that is not the case. So fusho is not like a life-denying statement. It's saying the nature of life is not what we think it is. And so then he repeats this whole process, the established way of the Buddha's turning the Dharma wheel. So shi no sho ni, so death cannot become life. And this is the established way of the Buddha's turning the Dharma wheel. And therefore, we say not death, or not no destruction, no perishing. Another translation by Nishijima Cross, which is usually one of my favorites, they translate these things as no appearance and no disappearance. So there is no essential essence which has appeared when life begins, and there's no essential essence which disappears when life ends. It's one way to talk about it. And then we go on to Shomo Ichiji no Karai Nari. Life also, one time's position is. Shimo Ichijo no Kurai Nari, death also one time's position is. So Shohaku Okamura calls this in life is a position in time, death is also a position in time. But I thought there was something really fascinating about the, and again, I mean, he may be incredibly, you know, just right to translate it the way he did, but if you look at it, you know, so word by word, life also one time's position is. So this suggests less like life is a position in time and more like sometimes time's position is life. Which ties, of course, to, you know, Dogen's written other fascicles about time and time being, time is being. So there's really not a difference here. It's not like there's time and then, you know, at sometimes there's life and sometimes there's death, but like sometimes time manifests as life and time manifests as death. So I think that's pretty fascinating. And then tatoeba, for example, fuyu to haru no gotashi, winter and spring's like, winter and spring are like this also. So fuyu no haru to, so winter, we don't think winter becomes spring. And we don't think spring becomes summer. And so again, this is like the firewood and the ash. We're using an example that isn't that hard for us, right? We don't project an inherent essence onto a season. We may be sad that it's, you know, seasons are changing or something, but we don't think, oh, summer, where are you going? Summer, we miss you. We don't think like summer is now dying. Summer is now suffering. It's gone somewhere. It, like, it has, somehow it exists apart from what's happening. We just, there was summer and then things changed and then there was fall and now it's winter. We don't, so he's encouraging us to imagine if we could look at our own lives that way. So, my question for the small groups, which I'm imagining that, you know, I don't know, I'm going to get into the groups and be like, what? you know, but I think that's okay. This is a very, you know, this is a subtle experiential truth that we can come into a closer relationship to. And, you know, you may or may not put much stock in coming closer to it by means of a class or a talk or chatting with a small group or trying to puzzle out the words in a text. But, you know, how else are you going to do it? Like, it's a way to do it. It's a way to just engage all the parts of ourselves and maybe introduce, maybe shake some thoughts up in our head, maybe question some things. Maybe, it, you know, at the moment, it's not going to make a lot of sense, but then something will click later on in the week. I'm like, or next year, who knows? But without, you know, I feel like wrestling with and engaging it can be very fascinating. So the question is, I mean, I don't know, maybe there's a better question to help y'all focus, but what do you think Dogen or Zen is saying about life and death here? And in what way can it bring a sense of peace? In what way could this be, make you feel a little less freaked out about living in a impermanent human body? Is that straightforward enough? Feel free if anybody has a question, by all means, ask and before we send you off. All right. Let's do this for 10 minutes. Come back around 8:50.
You could give us a half an hour. You could give us 2 hours and we'd still not have enough time.
Well, I guess that's a good sign.
Time is like memories are just like fragments of time that we store. As a being, he's still really secluded from memories. I mean, that's like an obvious cliche.
All right, so we have 10 minutes left. Any thoughts or comments or questions kind of might have come out of your discussions or whatever? Just open the floor. Drew.
So I guess I was, I think I'm kind of imposing my own thought process on Dogen, maybe like seeing what I see rather than maybe what he meant. But I guess I've often thought that none of us has to ever experience being dead, right? It's not like you're going to wake up one morning and say, oh crap, I'm dead, right? Because there is no longer any you to talk about once you're dead. So I don't know, I guess I take solace in that, and that I will never have to experience being dead. Anyhow.
To follow that, we had kind of had a term in our discussion called anticipatory grief, and which is an interesting concept to wrap your minds around. And you know, along that line, I mean, some of the grief that you experience is anticipatory, right? If you're in life, you don't have to necessarily grieve over death, but.
Tyler.
Yeah, it made me kind of consider that the way that he has said, you know, life does not become death. Our life is not just kind of like one slow march towards our death, right? Like that's not how we, like that is, and unfortunately that is sometimes how it's could be viewed, and like we're on this thing and there's this end point that we're just moving towards. Maybe not at some point in our life, we start thinking of it that way. And that might not be far off what anticipatory grief you guys were kind of getting at with that. It might be different, but it's a thing. Like we have our life and our life is our life. And each moment is, you know, in our life, but then it's not something that's just slowly turning into our death. That is a whole, that is a separate thing that we all, that may have as experience that we don't know. We're not, you know, none of us, as we haven't been dead, so we don't know what it is, but it will be its own thing. Whatever it is separate from our life. And just having that sort of not transitioning is kind of a nicer way to potentially live, I guess.
Yeah, I like that.
So was that one of Dogen's points is, you know, there seems to be like a cause and effect thing. Was Dogen trying to mitigate the grief from death, or was he just defining terms and cause and effect and just how to think of things? Was he trying to do what other religions do and basically?
Good question. I think what I find really fascinating about Buddhism and Zen is it rarely, I wouldn't say never, but it rarely manufactures something just to make us feel better. You know, it's ostensibly it's about uncovering reality. It's about facing reality exactly as it is.
But it's also about eliminating suffering.
And yet, the wonderful thing is, like, I feel like this is the Buddha's discovery. Face reality, and I don't know, and one way to put it is, it's not as bad as you think it is. Like, actual freedom and peace can arise if you really face reality. So in a way, nothing needs to be manufactured. You know, no extra solace needs to be offered. If you simply face reality, if you face the emptiness of self, the boundlessness of self, the way that we arise each and every moment codependently with everything in the universe, and therefore, like, what is the transition from life to death in that circumstance? It's just a changing, situation. And not, there's no, things are changing and things are being lost and reborn, but in a sense, nothing is lost. So it's like, I don't feel like Dogen, you know, he's not setting out to, like, have you read this and go, like, oh, that makes me feel so much better about death. And yet I think there is an aspect of it there. It's not made terribly, perhaps terribly accessible, but I don't know. I know that for a long time, I mean, I still don't claim to fully understand this, but, you know, there was the time when it was seemed even more mysterious and obscure, but still something in it resonated. You know, there's kind of like, okay, there is no return to living after a person dies. I'm kind of like, okay, he's telling it like it is. All right. And then it says, however, and therefore we say, you know, no arising, no destruction. It's intrigued me, at least.
So, Demir, you said we don't lose anything. Is it maybe like, because there's nothing to lose to begin with? Is that the idea?
Yes. So in terms of the nothing is lost, I mean, obviously things are lost, right? Beings and situations and, you know, through change, things are lost. But that which we care the most about is not lost, because that is just something we imagined anyway. That is just something we're projecting, is this enduring, inherent self-essence that is going to, you know, it's like, as Tyler was saying, like, this little self-essence going to go through our life, and then, like, oh no, here comes death, and, like, it's like, you know, it's like we imagine that little being is going to be subject to all of this stuff when it's going to be what it is when that happens. We'll be a dying person, and then we'll be a corpse, and then we'll be a memory in other people's minds, and then
So how much of the fact that we think something is lost is part of the delusions we're supposed to avoid?
That's kind of the main delusion.
Right?
That's the big one. And yet, you know, to be fair, go ahead, note next, but to be fair, like, we want to be skillful with this teaching, right? Which means, this is not the teaching for all situations. You know, if you're consoling somebody who's just lost somebody, you know, it's not time for a lecture on how, you know, actually, nothing is lost. You know, like, just, it's not the time. It's something for us, ourselves, to hold and to explore and to question. Vikas.
Yeah, something that I guess we were discussing, and I was thinking about, was how firewood doesn't become ash. It's like, not like it's firewood and then it's ash. It, like, burns for a long time. And so there's, like, you know, it's not like, you know, this is the state and this is the other state. And it's like life was always dying until the end. And it's only that once it becomes ash, we kind of like that the absence of the warmth is noticed. But in a sense, like, we do bring that moment to moment, because like that's what happens when you maybe ruminate on the past too much, because you're like, it's kind of like the opposite of anticipatory grief, right? Because you're like grieving like the versions of you that have died, almost. I don't know.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, that's a good point.
Like whatever's been burnt off already.
That's a good point. And it also kind of speaks a little bit to the ungraspable nature of our moment by moment experience, that essentially every moment things are being born and things are dying, and it isn't like, well, there was, you know, here's, because the before and after are, they don't even really exist, right? There's only this moment, which is like in constant transition. So it's not even really like there's firewood, there's ash. It's just right now we're in the Dharma position of our life. Well, yes, that very deep topic. And that's what I'm loving about Gendro Koan, is like every week is like a whole new, I mean, he's got a lot packed in there in that little chapter. All right, we dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thanks for coming, everyone.
Bye, everybody.